Thanks, everyone, for taking the time here. Certainly a great event. So as you mentioned, I'm Maxwell Gold, the Director of Investment Strategy at ETF Securities. And I know what you guys are thinking. Yes, I'm well aware of the irony of a guy named Max Gold wanting to talk about commodities. So with that, what I want to do is sort of take a different approach and, you know, sort of give you guys a perspective of what our outlook is in terms of the commodities market for this year going into next year, and really where we see some opportunities within that space, you know, from both an investment standpoint as well from a portfolio construction standpoint. And overall, you know, I do think, that it is a very attractive environment right now for the commodity space. They've certainly been an asset class that have been out of favor for the past, you know, 5 or 6 years. You know, last year was the first positive return for the Bloomberg Commodity Index since 2010. And certainly we have seen a improvement of fundamentals, which have really been dragging down the commodities market recently. But a little bit about ETF Securities globally. You know, we're a global ETF provider with about $22 billion in assets. And, you know, our footprint historically has been in the commodities space. Here in the U.S., we've been in the U.S. since 2009. We've been primarily known for our physically backed precious metals ETFs. But just last month, we launched a new suite of diversified Bloomberg commodity ETFs that are no K-1, that are 40X structured, tracking Bloomberg commodity indices. And, you know, they're very competitively priced. And I'll get to that in a little bit at the end. But, you know, what I want to do is, you know, talk more broadly about our outlook, you know, why commodities make sense right now, why now might be a good time to consider commodities as an asset class. So if you turn to the, just look at the chart to the right, you know, where we stand from both a growth and inflation standpoint for the market, you know, we have been in a very challenging environment for, you know, really since the financial crisis. You know, we've had muddled through growth for the U.S., you know, at about, you know, 2.5%, and that's most likely expected to persist in that 2.5-3% for the next couple of years. On the flip side, inflation has sort of been absent the market for the past few years. You know, that really has been a changing factor really beginning of last year. As you can see at the chart to the right, you know, I have a couple of different measures of inflation. And overall, if you focus on, you know, whether it be CPI or PPI, a measure of producer or price inflation, or PCE, which is a measure that the Fed uses for their benchmark in policymaking decisions, we've seen a run-up of increased inflationary pressures. And that has obviously been reflective of inputs of goods and services, a base effect rolling off from low commodity prices rising. But additionally, we're seeing inflationary pressures elsewhere in the market and other sources of costs, such as labor and increased wages. So in an environment where we are seeing a bit of a stabilization in global growth, which you can see the chart to the left, comparing emerging market growth and developed market growth, we have seen a bit of a stabilization and uptick on the developed market side. And on the flip side, we do see emerging markets continuing to be the catalyst of global growth for years to come. So when you put that picture together, we have seen a recovery in the growth story, driven by increased industrial production, increased manufacturing PMI measures, as well as increased trade. If you look at, say, a Baltic Dry Index, we have seen a pickup, a recovery of shipping rates. So when you put all that together, that has been a boon for commodity prices and increase of commodity demand. So demand has been improving. It's been stable for several years, and obviously we do see constructive outlook for the demand side for commodities. But really, it's been the supply side that's been the real challenge that has led to really oversupply by miners and by producers of oil that has, you know, driven the market downwards. And really, talking to that, you know, we do see, you know, commodities beginning to, you know, rebalance and stabilize across the board. You know, pair that with an attractive economic environment, you know, where we see ourselves right now is most likely in the second half of an expansionary cycle. And so if you think of a typical economic cycle, you typically have, you know, the first half of growth driven by, you know, coming off of a low base following a recession with lack of inflation. But when we move into the sort of the second half or the further expansionary second half of a cycle, we do see that inflation factor pick up. And that's where we think we are right now, where we are seeing continued stabilization and expansion of growth globally with an increase of inflationary pressures. And that historically has been a good environment for commodities in particular to outperform other asset classes as well as to, you know, provide some investment opportunities. So speaking of specific investment opportunities, you know, I just want to go down sort of our outlook where we see individual sectors and highlight a couple of key themes that will most likely persist throughout 2017 for the individual commodity sectors. So what I've done here is I've actually pulled together a couple of charts looking at energy markets, particularly oil. And this is most likely some charts you've seen in the news or, you know, in some research reports. But overall, if you look at the chart to the left, that's the U.S. oil rig count. And what this is highlighting is that we've seen a huge increase of expansion or production in the U.S. of new rigs coming online to produce oil, primarily from the shale oil story. And that has been, you know, to the detriment of global oil prices, where the U.S. market has historically been a much smaller percentage of global oil production. You know, it has become much more the swing producer, where the activity in the U.S. is much driving oil prices on the margin, which is certainly what we've seen evolve over the past really 3 or 4 years. And you can see that to the chart to the right, where I'm comparing U.S. aggregate production of crude compared to OPEC. And there's an important meeting upcoming on May 25th, whereby the OPEC is expected to further extend their production cuts, which they began last November, December. And they've actually had a rarity. OPEC has actually been compliant in their stated production cuts. And you can see that to the chart on the right, where you see the production of 1 million barrels per day come down from about 34 to 32 where we are right now. On the flip side, in response to that, oil prices have recovered. We came off the lows about 35, 40, and right now we're at about $50 crude. But that has obviously been in response, seen an increase of production in the U.S., which you can see from the crude projections of the U.S. in the green line on the chart to the right, as well as the overall amount of activity in the U.S. production market as measured by the recovery or pickup in the number of oil rigs in activity in the U.S. right now. So overall, we do expect oil in particular to be range-bound from anywhere from $40 to $55 per barrel this year. But we do see, more importantly, the market moving more into balance. And that's really been the issue in recent years. We've seen such an oversupply with new sources of production come online, primarily from the U.S. and North America. And we've seen an overproduction of coming out from OPEC, which has really been weighing on the oil prices recently. But where we see the market rebalancing and coming more online and more into equilibrium is where we're seeing continued inventory drawdowns. That's really what we saw just yesterday, as well as what we expect to see in Q3 and Q4. Further inventory drawdowns with a continued production cuts should bring the oil market much more into equilibrium. And that's where we see, going into Q3, Q4, and even Q1 next year, much more tailwinds for directionality in terms of oil prices. But overall, we just expect oil markets continue to be range-bound this year, driven by primarily the factor of rebalancing of supply-side destruction. Now, turning focus from energy sector more towards the precious metals sector. So precious metals have had a strong year last year, certainly a turning point. And there's been a lot of focus, a lot of attention to it driven by, say, uncertainty or geopolitical volatility, or, obviously the Brexit issue was a big factor last year, as well as the ongoing election. But overall, what is key to driving precious metals markets, in my view, is real interest rates. So that's a measure of interest rates, like the 5-year, 10-year, and stripping out the impact of inflation. And you can see that relationship. It's a pretty strong negative relationship between the precious metals, which the chart to the left highlights, their directionality of the price, and the move of real interest rates on a 5-year basis. And you can see that makes some intuitive sense, that when real interest rates are low, the cost of holding or opportunity cost of holding precious metals like gold, silver, platinum, palladium is essentially low from the fact that the investment return you would get from investing at a low rate environment is essentially zero or negative. So when real interest rates are low or negative, that's typically where we see precious metals perform positively, and they have done so, as we've seen real interest rates continue to be negative on a 2-year and 5-year basis, and pretty much range bound and flat on a 10-year basis. Right now, real rates are about 40 basis points on a real interest rate basis, and our expectation is that real rate environment will continue to be low, close to zero, because we have seen inflation begin to pick up, and we actually do expect the Fed to take a stance of a policy overshoot from their inflation targets of 2%. And in that environment, even though they are raising rates, which is traditionally viewed as a negative for precious metals, it's really real interest rates, the factor of what's happening with inflation, as well as expectations for further rate hikes by the Fed. Additionally, another key factor that's been driving precious metals markets has been the dollar. And the dollar has had a strong appreciation since 2014. But overall, where we see that since then has been very much range-bound. We've seen a pickup late last year following the election results with the enthusiasm enthusiasm around Trump victory. And really, since then, the dollar has come off of those highs and has come back much more into its recent three-year range. And you can see that to the chart to the right. And overall, our expectation is that the dollar will continue to be weakened in the first half of this year and strengthen further in the second half, moving in line with what our expectation is, two further rate hikes by the Fed. But overall, the dollar will likely be flat for 2017. And I think in that environment, that has been a boost for precious metals in particular, but as well as other broad commodities. And so that's something to keep an eye on in terms of these two key factors driving precious metals, being real interest rates and the dollar. And what I want to touch upon just one more sector briefly is industrial metals. So certainly we've seen a big rally in industrial metals following in Q3, Q4 of last year, and that's continued so far. And what has been driving that has been, it's been pretty straightforward from a fundamental standpoint. And we've seen a big ramp up of oil production in recent years, even though commodity prices have resulted as a downward trend. We've seen a similar play of increased investment, increased mine production and mine capacity by metal miners globally in recent years. And that obviously that overcapacity of investment has increased supply while keeping demand pretty consistent. So obviously that has weighed on prices. What we've seen beginning last year is actually a reduction of capital expenditure or investment by miners globally. And this is across copper miners, aluminum miners, nickel and zinc miners. So this is an aggregate looking at the industrial performance relative to those miners in those sectors and how much they're spending in capital expenditure. And you can see that there's a pretty clear negative relationship where we have seen a reduction of investment, a reduction of capital expenditure by miners to help reduce the amount of supply coming online. And we're actually seeing a lot of these metals markets, such as nickel, such as aluminum, such as copper, become much more imbalanced and actually expected to move into deficit later this year and next year. So in that environment where we are seeing supply side destruction continue and pull back, that's actually been a boon to industrial metal prices, particularly in the backdrop of what we expect is continued demand for industrials, primarily from the trend of global infrastructure. So that was a big theme last year, especially this year, with the expectation the U.S. will get some kind of infrastructure bill through the door, whether it be this year or next year. But overall, what's interesting is that we have seen a marked increase of global infrastructure spending globally, and not just from the U.S. or developed markets or India or China, but emerging markets as a total. And you can see that to the chart to the left, where the expectations over the next two decades are to see a rapid increase of global infrastructure spending, particularly from India, which is a big source where it's expected to see a further buildup of its infrastructure. And that is obviously a boon towards industrial metals such as steel, copper, aluminum, nickel, zinc, as we do see an increased demand while at the same time reduction of supply in the short and medium term. So what I want to do now is switch focus just slightly and sort of saying, here's our view. We do see the current macro environment being very conducive for commodities, but how do you think about them in terms of the context of the asset allocation or a portfolio? And from my perspective, I think that commodities do serve a key role within a portfolio. They certainly have diversification benefits, which you can see the chart here comparing commodity performances by the aggregate BCOM or Bloomberg Commodity Index, as well as the individual sectors compared to U.S. equities and interest rates. And you can see that for the most part, commodities have a low correlation to both global equities, U.S. equities, and interest rates. It's been about 0.3, 0.4, which is considered a low correlation. And you can see if you break it down by the sectors, we actually have negative correlations in some sectors. For example, precious metals has a low correlation, lowest correlation to equities. And certainly we do see that livestock has a negative correlation to interest rates. And if you break that down, where it fits into a portfolio, it does add diversification benefits. It does help increase portfolio efficiency by reducing your drawdowns or reducing your relative volatility. But further, what's unique about commodities as an asset class is that they provide a second layer of diversification and that there's a low correlation amongst their individual sectors. And that intercorrelation amongst commodity components or their constituents actually helps provide a further lower correlation in that when the asset class rises, it doesn't have a huge drawdown or huge directionality in terms of the impact of the portfolio. So it provides diversification across asset classes as well as diversification amongst its own components. And those two layers of diversification, certainly we see the benefits when you put into a stock bond portfolio or 60-40 portfolio over time. It has a consistently low correlation to a 60-40 diversified portfolio, commodities as an asset class. And further, the sort of the second key role, so the first key role of commodities in a portfolio being sort of that key alternative investment, providing diversification as well as increased portfolio efficiency and reduced drawdowns, is I see, you know, commodities serving as a key part of an inflation hedging solution. And you can see that, you know, historically commodities have performed positively when inflation in the U.S. rises by 50 basis points or more over a given year. And we've obviously seen U.S. CPI, U.S. PPI increase over the last 12 months to three-year highs. And so certainly that has been to the boost of commodity prices globally, as energy and agriculture food prices are intrinsically linked to inflation measures, especially on a headline basis. But overall, if you break it down by sector, you can see that energy is the most sensitive to realized inflation, you know, followed by the overall commodity index, and then agriculture, and then precious metals and livestock. So overall, you know, we do see, you know, in commodities, you know, be responsive to realized inflation, but they're also track inflation surprises over time. So that essentially what is viewed as unexpected inflation in the market, we typically see that as a positive boost to overall direction of commodity prices over time. And then further, when you actually look at them compared to other real assets such as infrastructure, real estate, healthcare, utilities, those other asset classes or investments that are traditionally viewed as real assets in addition to commodities, we do see that commodities are usually ranked of the top, you know, performing investments of a universe of 50 real assets. And, you know, it's important to realize that, you know, we do see commodities serving as that inflation hedging component as part of an overall strategy, but as well as it does have, you know, it does tend to track both realized and unexpected inflation over time. And so those are really the two key components of how I view precious metals and commodities in a portfolio. So what I want to do is, I got a few minutes now, I want to touch upon sort of highlighting our new product suite, which does, you know, track the Bloomberg commodity indices that we launched just about a month ago. And certainly it's a very innovative suite in our view. You know, traditionally we're viewed as for our precious metals products, whether it be physically backed gold, silver, platinum, or palladium, or a diversified basket of all four precious metals. But now we actually have the three new products being the ETF Securities Bloomberg Commodity Indices. These are 40 Act structured ETFs, so there's no K-1. We did execute the exemptive relief, but we are tracking the Bloomberg Commodity Index, the Total Return Index. That's our benchmark, stated benchmark, and our collateral, we're investing very conservatively. So the end result is you essentially have an index that costs ETF that tracks the Bloomberg Index that costs 29 basis points with no K-1 issue statement. That in our view, this is a very attractive way to gain exposure to the broad commodity index. And we like the Bloomberg Commodity Index because it is the most diversified, well-balanced commodity index out there that gets exposure to 22 commodities across all five sectors that I've outlined in the presentation here, being energy, industrial metals, precious metals, livestock, and agriculture. And overall, you know, we have partnered closely with Bloomberg to, you know, bring together a very cost-effective product, whether it be the BCI product, which tracks the front month, so essentially this is tracking Bloomberg Commodity Index one for one, the BCD, which is the three-month forward, so, you know, avoiding the issues of roll issues of contango and backwardation. If you want to get a little bit more, you know, steady exposure to the markets over time, we view that much more of a strategic allocation vehicle. And then we also have the BEF product, which is looking at the Bloomberg energy sector, so exposure to WTI, Brent, crude, as well as natural gas, heating oil, and gasoline. So certainly if you guys have specific product questions, be sure to visit our booth right outside. We're happy to answer any questions specific to, you know, some of the research I've provided in the space, whether it be commodities or precious metals, as well as the specific questions about these new products that we brought onto the line. But overall, you know, we do see them as, you know, they're very competitively priced. I believe they're about 60% cheaper than the average commodity ETF out there. And that's certainly a changing factor. We see that commodities have been an overlooked asset class, particularly in the ETF space, and we view this as a new, you know, vehicle to get, you know, broad exposure on a very cost-effective basis with avoiding the K-1 issues that a lot of advisors out there just don't like dealing with. So with that, you know, I can turn it over to a couple of quick questions if you guys have anything specifically, but other than that, I believe my time is almost up. So happy to take any questions.
I saw your correlations for precious metals to, I think it was the Ag and the S&P 500. Do you have, or could you give us some indication of what the correlation specifically for gold is to the ag and the S&P 500?
Yeah, so historically, gold has had about a 0.1 correlation. It's varied over time. It's varied, you know, between sort of that negative 0.1 to 0.1 correlation to U.S. equities. It's been a little bit higher for global equities. But overall, precious metals as a component, they typically range anywhere from, you know, anywhere from that negative 1 for gold to up. The max I've seen is about 15 on either the silver, platinum, palladium. So they typically have a low correlation to equities. Gold has had the lowest, but it's varied depending on the time period you're looking at. Historically, I'd say that it has right now it does have a trailing positive correlation to U.S. equities. Historically, it has moved into periods where it's had that negative correlation.
And how about with the ag?
With the ag, I believe, going back to the slide.
Gold.
So looking at precious metals, the ag, it has, it does have a negative correlation, because if you think of it, what's beneficial to the ag is, it tied to the ag is interest rates. So we do see that continued low correlation as well. I've seen it vary. It's been a very range bound as well, and sort of that low positive correlation historically, specifically for gold. But we have seen that be much more responsive and higher for some of the more industrial sensitive precious metals like silver and platinum.
And in precious metals, I guess that includes gold, silver.
So the measure here is looking at gold, silver, platinum, and palladium.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Yep. Well, thanks, everybody, for taking the time.